Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Be Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. Hi, this is Hope Gibbs with the Incandescent Radio Network. I am here with Mansoor Javidan at the Professional Business Women of California Conference, where more than 4,000 women have showed up to listen to us all talk about what it means to lean in. It's the next generation. And Mansoor is an amazing, amazing academic. He is a distinguished professor and founding director at the Najavi Global Mindset Institute at Thunderbird University. He is former Dean of Research at Thunderbird School of Global Management and is currently the Garvin Distinguished Professor and Founding Director of the Najavi Global Mindset Institute. He's won multiple awards as an executive educator and author whose teaching and research interests span the globe. He's received his MBA and PhD degrees from the Carlson School at the University of Minnesota, and he is here today to talk to us about the speech that he's giving at the conference, Mastering the Art of Global Leadership. So tell us, what does that mean exactly?
Well, if you look at what's happening in most industries, growth is through globalization. So companies are looking for new markets in other countries. They're looking for supply chain partners in different parts of the world, talent pools in different parts of the world. So corporations are globalizing. Now, what is the effect of that very simple idea of the company trying to explore global markets on the day-to-day activities that the typical manager has to play? My answer to that is, as the company globalizes, a typical manager working for them will be increasingly asked to work effectively with people who are from different parts of the world. Doesn't matter where the manager is from, but the people who he or she is working with will be from other parts of the world. Now, what I just said is really the crux of the human challenges that a lot of corporations are facing and a lot of individuals are facing. Think about this. If you think back about your own elementary school and high school, your teachers, textbooks, did they teach you to live and work with people who are different from you? The answer, when I asked that from thousands of managers, the answer from 99% of them is no. I learned how to live and work with people who are like me. That's what societies do. That's how they educate their kids. So what happens then is these unicultural kids become adults, start working for companies who want to globalize. And now the company is saying to these people, yeah, it's good that you can work with people who are like you, but I need you to work with people who are different from you. And a typical manager is scratching their head saying, well, what the hell does that mean? I never trained for that. I never developed for that. So there is a real disconnect between what the companies are very logically asking of their managers and how managers are developed as human beings. So the issue of global leadership is really about how to work effectively, how to influence, because leadership is about influence. So how to influence people who are different from you. And we've worked now with thousands of managers in many, many different countries. So what we've discovered is that, first of all, We do not have one single company who would tell us they have an oversupply of global leaders. Every company we know of tells us we have a shortage of global leaders. And the reason is obvious, because that's the natural state of affairs, because people are developed as local leaders, but companies are asking them to become global leaders. So, given that issue, now the question is, how do you help these people? what kind of training, what kind of development, what kind of support does the corporation, does the individual need to figure this thing out and be successful at that. So in our work, the question we asked back in 2004 was, why is it that some managers are very good at working with people who are different from them, and some managers are very bad? What distinguishes, what are those individual characteristics, individual qualities that differentiate the good manager from the ineffective manager? So we've done a lot of very rigorous research, and we found the answer. We call the key difference between managers who are successful in global roles versus managers who fail in global roles is what we call global mindset. Global mindset is a set of individual characteristics. If you have a high level of those, it makes it easier for you to work with people who are different from you. If you have a low level of those, it makes it really hard. It causes all kinds of challenges, issues, and frustrations for you as a manager and the people you're dealing with. So based on the work we've done, we now know that global mindset has three major dimensions. We call them capitals. Intellectual capital is the cognitive side. It's about what you know, how much you know about different cultures, different companies, different customers in different parts of the world. Psychological capital is all about, do you like dealing with people who are different from you? You may be very knowledgeable about other cultures. It doesn't mean you're going to enjoy it. Some people love it. Some people hate it. So in psychological capital is about that willingness to engage, interest in engaging. Passion for diversity, for example. Do you like to travel? Do you like to spend time with people from other parts of the world? How much of an Indiana Jones you have in you, testing yourself, trying new things. The third part of global mindset is what we call social capital. It's about how you interact with people who are different from you. How easy it is for you to listen to people from other parts of the world. How easy it is for you to emotionally connect to people from other parts of the world. How easy it is for you to negotiate agreements, contracts with people from other parts of the world. So global mindset has these three dimensions: intellectual, psychological, and social. And a manager who has high levels of those will find it easier, will be more likely to succeed in global responsibilities. And a manager who has low levels of those will find it a huge challenge and a very painful, frustrating experience. So what we've done over the past few years is we've now designed an instrument. It's a questionnaire. It's a scientifically designed questionnaire that measures your profile of global mindset. So it shows you what are the areas that you're very strong at, what are the areas that you're not as strong, and what you can do to improve it.
So is it like a big grid where you fit in, you figure out which characteristics are yours, and then you can teach people how to master those so that you understand your strengths and weaknesses and the challenges you have?
That's exactly what we do. What we are, for each manager or group of managers, we identify the areas of strength and the areas that need development. And then we help them decide what are the steps and actions that they need to take over a period of time to improve in those areas.
So how is this specific or different for women? Does it make a difference on gender or not?
I'm glad you asked that question. When I give talks to corporations and other groups, I make the point that to be successful in global markets, corporations need women who think and act like women, not like men. This may sound really weird, but women have a different profile when it comes to global mindset compared to men. There are areas of global mindset that there is no difference between men and women. However, there are areas that there are big differences. Mm-hmm. For example, women have much higher passion for diversity than men. They're much more excited about dealing with people who are different from them. They're more open to it compared to men. Men, however, tend to have higher scores in terms of their knowledge of global issues, competitors, global strategy, which my interpretation is men typically have had more opportunities to be in those roles and to learn about those situations. Women have a much stronger approach in what we call intercultural empathy. In other words, connecting, emotionally connecting to people who are different from them. Men are not as good. So my recommendation to companies is you need to create top management teams that have gender diversity. Not just because it's a good thing to do, it's a nice thing to do, not just because women should be treated equally to men, but because actually it gives you an advantage. If you have women and men on your team, they bring in different expertise and different skill sets to the team, and that makes the team more likely to succeed.
Fascinating, and it makes perfect sense, right? Yeah. But it needs a ton of research. No doubt. So talk about this leaning in. Why do women have a hard time? Is it just historic? Is it something built into us? What does your research show?
I'm sure different people have different answers to that question, because by definition, this is a multidimensional issue. So someone whose expertise is in child development would argue that, well, the childhood experiences that girls and boys have gone through are different, therefore they produce different types of people, which is true. My area of expertise is working with men and women in middle ranks all the way to CEO ranks of corporations. And what I have observed is that, first of all, there is an industry difference. So some industries tend to be much more male-dominated, much more male-oriented. Not because somebody designed it that way, but because it has a long legacy, long heritage of men being in charge and being given the responsibilities and the roles. Other industries, such as, for example, the high-tech industry, tends to be more balanced in terms of their approach to men and women. In contrast, natural resources industries tend to be more male-oriented, as an example. So there is an industry effect in terms of opportunities that are provided. And then you have organizational issues. Some corporations tend to be much more serious about the idea of let's leverage all the capabilities that women can bring to the organization the same way that we try to leverage all the capabilities of men. An example of that is Ernst & Young, the one of the big four accounting firms that we do a lot of work with. At Ernst & Young, there has been now for a few years a very strong focus on what they call diversity and inclusive leadership. Now, in the past, most companies have had people in charge of diversity, usually under HR. But their approach to diversity has been legal. We have to comply with whatever the rules are. Women, ethnicities, etc. Companies like Ernst & Young, and there is now an increasing number of companies that are at this point, these companies are saying, no, no, this is not a legal issue, this is a competitive advantage issue. It's not about what the law says, It's about what's the best competitive advantage for our company. And the answer is we need to do a better job of creating and leveraging diversity of thought and diversity of action in our organization, from the top all the way down. Because the higher the level of diversity, the better the chances that we'll be more creative, that we'll be more successful. So they've designed, Ernst & Young has designed a series of initiatives to proactively encourage participation of women for a very specific reason. It gives them competitive advantage, and I totally agree with that.
Hey, here's to being competitive, and here's to rise, because I think the biggest issue is that women have so much to offer, and that's the underlying frustration, right? We don't get heard, and we don't know how to stand up for ourselves, and even if we do, we're looked down upon. So those, you know, that perfect storm makes us frustrated as anything, and we really want to shift it. So I that's my opinion. So tell us, we have a few more minutes left. Tell us about the UN Alliance for, what is it?
The UN Alliance
of Civilizations. You help people from different cultures understand each other better so that they learn to get along. We were talking earlier, I said, does that help them stop war? And you said, no, that's probably not going to happen. So let's talk a little bit about that UN initiative, your role in it, and how we can understand it and apply it maybe to our own lives.
Sure. A few years ago, the United Nations created a new agency, a new organization. It's called the United Nations Alliance of Civilizations. Originally, two prime ministers, the current prime minister of Turkey and the former prime minister of Spain, were the kind of the organizers of this. They were requested by the UN to be the custodian and to sponsor. So since then, it has been growing very rapidly, and many countries, many governments are involved. The membership of this organization is very interesting and unique. So you have prime ministers, foreign ministers, presidents from different countries, and then you have CEOs of corporations, you have academics, and I'm one of them, and also a lot of younger generations, students, university students, even high school students. So the purpose of this organization is, or let me rephrase it. The United Nations has come to a conclusion that the world of business is forcing people from different parts of the world to come into contact. Makes perfect sense. Companies are looking for opportunities beyond their borders. So as a result, they're creating a lot of interaction, a lot of contact between people from different parts of the world. And what we have learned now for about over the past 20, 30 years is that these people who are coming into contact with others from other parts of the world aren't necessarily ready for it. For example, I was having lunch with a CNN International executive who told me that CNN International was a pioneer in distributing, providing information about many different parts of the world to people from all over the world. And I responded by saying, yes, and the more I learned about you, the more I disliked you. I wanted to make the point that just bringing people into contact doesn't automatically mean that it's going to be lovey-dovey. It actually can cause all kinds of conflict. So the United Nations has come to that conclusion that people of the world are coming into contact because corporations are bringing them into contact, but their societies don't usually prepare them for this level of contact. So the UN now has created this organization that would sponsor initiatives, engage in a whole series of activities to help people from different cultures, different countries, learn about each other, learn how to get along with each other and learn how to understand each other. So this organization does many things, many initiatives, and the reason they have CEOs and corporations involved because companies have been dealing with these cross-cultural issues for a longer period and have been focusing on it much more than governments have. So the UN is saying governments can learn from academics, governments can learn from corporations, and the youth of the society is really the target. Because if we can help educate the youth, we'll have, in the long term, we'll have a better chance of achieving our goals. So that's what we do.
Well, that's wonderful. And I really want to keep having this conversation with you, but we're out of time at the moment. I am very excited about Mastering the Art of Global Leadership, which is your keynote speech here at the Professional Business Women's Conference. But would you come back and talk to us again?
Absolutely. Happy to.
Excellent. Well, we'll be hearing more from Mansoor Javedan from Thunderbird University. And this is Hope Gibbs with the Incandescent Radio Network at the Professional Business Women's Conference of California with your ongoing coverage. So we'll be back in touch with you soon with another great speaker. So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.